It's WrestlePod, the Troopany Show, with your host, James Troopany.
Hello and welcome to the Troopany Show. My name is James Troopany and this is my show. And today we are talking about New Japan Cup, a few other bits and pieces as well. A bit of a general housekeeping episode of the Troopany Show where we're talking wrestling from around the world. And to join me today in an old school manner is Mr. Alexander Watt of the BBC. How are you, sir?
Hello, very dramatic intro there. just the two of us today.
Just the two of us.
Yeah. Like the old days.
Like the old days, yeah. Alex Edwards was supposed to be joining us today. He was unfortunately otherwise occupied at a family function because it's actually Mother's Day today. Emily Reed of XWA Ring Announcer fame and Pro Wrestling E-Booking fame was also due to help us today, but she's got the boy germs apparently from Kota Ibushi and is very, very ill, so she has no voice left, so she can't be with us today.
But at least it's, you know, a famous virus she's got. It's a claim to fame that you got ill because of Kota Ibushi.
Yeah, apparently coming out of them fireworks was boy germs. Or the flu. And also, Chelsea Spolin was also due to be with us today, but she got up this morning about an hour and a half ago and went, because she's equally as unfit as Emily is. So she's going to take a break today. She didn't get a chance to get everything watched and didn't feel that she could do the show justice. So it's just me and you today, sir.
No pressure. To be fair, I also woke up feeling that way this morning, but because of the time difference, I've had like 5 hours to recover from last night. Because I had a hangover this morning, not going to lie.
Is that how you celebrate Mother's Day in Manchester?
Yeah, that's how we do it in the north.
As we were just discussing before we came on air, I actually walked past Alex's new house last Sunday night and didn't even realise.
Yeah, so that's how prepared we are, how organised we are. We were literally within like metres of one another and had no idea.
Yeah, so there you go. It's the Troopany Show curse of non-meeting, but what can you do? Yeah, I went to see Progress last week. It was exceptional and very, very good fun show. And then I watched on the way home TNA Impact for the new management and the new direction. And it's rubbish.
Also an exceptional show, I was going to ask. Was that on the same level as Progress?
One of my friends, Sai, said to me on the way home, "You, what did you need to do? You need to rig-level yourself because Progress was that good and just watch that shit."
Bring yourself back down to earth.
Yeah, I think that was pretty much what I was looking for. It's Sunday night, and even if I'm on a train, I watch it with my friend Chrissy, because that's what we do on a Sunday night, and I'm on a train home, and I've got my phone with me, and I've got another Total Wrestling journalist, Kyle Gack, who's also watching things on his phone, so it's like, we should watch things on a phone, because that's what we're doing on the way home. And so I'm watching this with Chrissy, and we're just watching it, this is just drizzle. And we can't understand how the viewing figures went up.
Yeah, but that's an interesting point. Is it because it's more accessible? Is it because people are, I guess, kind of just wanting to see what's going to happen under the new management?
I think that's partly it. So the word going around at Progress last week was that the reason why the viewing figures went up was everybody wants to see what the train wreck's going to be like.
There is that, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just... I can understand that they've put themselves in a position because they've lost all that talent in short order, but whose fault's that? And also, you know, the bits I actually really enjoyed on the show are no longer there. No Jade, best wrestler in the company, she isn't there anymore, you know. And I've seen gifs of this week's show, and I'm not holding up hope for it being any good at all. In fact, I might actually hate it.
who's left then? Because there was a whole exodus. So Jade went, Bennett and Maria went, the Hardys went.
Gail Kim has yet to re-sign.
Yeah.
I think there's a couple of others as well. Who was the other ones?
Yeah, there was like 2 days when it was just like every wrestler seemed to leave TNA at once.
Yeah.
Like, are they even going to have a roster to do a new show with? Obviously then like Del Rio and all these people started popping up.
But... yeah, that was really boring as well.
Mm.
I have no interest in Del Rio. Alberto El Patron. I had zero interest in him joining TNA, and he had a really boring match with Bobby Lashley. And won the world championship in a dusty finish, which was returned to Lashley the following week, and it...
Oh, God, it just... it hurts, doesn't it?
Like, it hurts that it's just overbooked. If you're going with that guy, go with that guy. If you're not, don't.
I think also it doesn't shock me that they don't know the best way to use El Patron, Del Rio.
No.
Because, you know, WWE had all the same issues, whereas when he was in Lucha Underground, he was exciting again. And probably because he was being himself to an extent.
Yeah, it all seemed a bit forced babyface. So, yeah. Anyway, we'll see how that goes. But let's move on to some good wrestling. New Japan Cup. That occurred over the last couple of weeks, which produced some interesting matches. And the New Japan Cup concept in general, it's been around since 2006. It's produced some interesting ideas down the last 10 years or so. Alex, what do you think of the New Japan Cup as a concept, first of all?
Yeah, it's always been interesting to me because it's not, you know, the G1 is the big one that everyone obviously looks forward to, and that's the big tournament of the year. Sometimes it feels like the New Japan Cup can get a little bit forgotten, but it's actually because of the straight elimination format. It's often, you know, a really exciting tournament. And I think particularly with this one, they used it well to like rebuild certain guys or get, you know, guys like Evil and Sanada had good tournaments where they can, you know, be pushed a bit higher up the card, which is kind of the point, really. And it's a good way to get them New Japan rolling on the towards the summer.
Yeah, I agree. It's you get some different and interesting things going on in this match and these matches. And well, the first night match, which is Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Evil, was a prime example. Tanahashi, the long-term ace of the company, loses out in 22 minutes and 55 seconds in a pinfall. I thought it was a really cracking match, though. Shows how far Evil has come as a major player in New Japan Pro Wrestling these days.
Yeah, it was a great match, one of the best of the tournament. And it, as well, it's this story that we sort of thought they might go with this year with the Tanahashi stuff. It seems to play into that of this guy was the ace of the company, and is he faltering now because he obviously had trouble in the G1, and then he's lost at Wrestle Kingdom to Naito, and now this, he's losing in the first round. It's hopefully this is going to be a long arc towards Wrestle Kingdom next year, which we were kind of wondering if they'd do, but then when he just won the trios titles the next night after losing to Wrestle Kingdom, it seemed to move away from that a little bit. So there are a few examples of that throughout the tournament of them doing clever sort of long-term storytelling thinking, and Evil winning is a big part of that as well. He looked great in this match, and hopefully it's the kind of thing like Tanahashi did with Sanada in the G1, where Sanada got the big win and then it's elevated him to a much higher level, and hopefully the same thing happens with Evil. He was obviously one of the best performers in the tournament, certainly, you know, he got to the semi-finals, so they did a lot with him, which is good.
Definitely. One of the old charges, though, that did have a good night was also Yuji Nagata, who defeated Tangaroa on the first night, or maybe in the second night. No, I think they did block one in the first night, didn't they, and they blocked two in the second night.
Yes.
So yeah, it was the first one. So it's Yuji Nagata who defeated Tangaroa in 11 minutes and 45 seconds. Nagata was there to replace Honma. As we know, he was temporarily paralyzed in a match just before the last pay-per-view tour, which was... can't remember the name of it now. What was it? Honor Rising and the other one that we talked about last week, and I can't remember the name. Honor Rising, and then the one that came after that.
The other one.
The other one, yeah. Yeah, during the last tour, there we go. I'll rephrase it as that. So, Yuji Nagata, who was there to replace Honma, who was injured during the last tour, getting feeling back in his fingers, is on his way to recovery. He defeats Tangaroa in 11 minutes and 45 seconds in another solid outing. Roa is doing good stuff now in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Had a bit of a chance to stretch his singles legs and did not embarrass himself. It was handy to have a long-term pro like Yuji Nagata to look after you, but certainly an entertaining match.
I did not think this was an entertaining match.
You didn't
match.
Think so? It was entertaining? I thought it was all right. This, I quite like this. You're not your keen.
Not my thing. I think Tangaroa, I like, you know, we've spoke about how Gorillas of Destiny, it has to be said like that. It's such such a great name, but they've really improved as a team.
Yeah,
over the last year, and they're really good. I think this maybe exposed Roa a bit, as he's so green. Like, I think that's the thing. And he looked a little bit lost at points. Like, he wasn't... It's that old thing of filling in the gaps. And it just was like, do a move and then do the next move. You know, it was very... I'm probably being a little bit harsh, but...
I thought it was all right. I didn't think it was bad at all. I didn't think it was like, you know, Omega versus Kakad or anything, but I thought it was... I thought it filled 11 minutes quite well.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably decent enough, but it just stood out because
the other stuff was really, really good. Yeah,
in this tournament as well. But you know, it did the job. Nagata, yeah, had a good tournament himself. We'll talk about his second round match next, which was actually really brilliant, I thought.
Yeah. Okay. Also in the first round, Michael Elgin was defeated by Bad Luck Fale in 10 minutes and 32 seconds. You know, this was one of the draws of the tournament because Elgin and Farley isn't necessarily been seen on the same level as Elgin, but really he is. You know, they're both former Intercontinental Champions. They're both gauging that work incredibly hard, and within their styles are very good at what they do. Farley is not as... does not move as well as other people do, but he's 100 pounds heavier than everybody else. He does try incredibly hard to put incredibly good matches together, and I think you're starting to see of all the rub of all the high quality workers he's worked with in Bullet Club and how good at storytelling he is now compared to where he was 2 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously use this tournament, like we were saying, to not create new stars necessarily, because he's already, you know, he's, like you say, he's been in there with big names, but almost like rebuild him as a monster.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
he has been kind of in the background for a bit, and I didn't expect him to go that far in this tournament. That was a surprise, but they sort of used him as the big guy dominating everyone on route to the final that then, you know, the babyface would have to overcome in the end. There was a lot of sort of forward-thinking booking in that way, that they're going to rebuild guys, and hopefully that they'll continue that with Farley. You know, he's not just going to disappear into the background. In terms of this match, it felt like a bit too much of a clash of styles because they were just both big power guys. I think, like, both of them work better with not smaller guys necessarily, but, you know, guys they can hit their power moves on, and then the baby faces or the heels or whatever can come back against them. I think this just, it's just a bit slow and plodding, unfortunately, and particularly after Elgin's coming off that match with Naito the other month, which was insane. This, yeah, just was kind of there for me.
Fair
enough. I'm not going to be this down on all the matches. It's just a couple that I was like, not as good, but there were. We'll talk about some of the Match of the Year candidates in a bit.
Speaking of Match of the Year candidates, in the next match, Tama Tonga lost to Zoriano in 3 minutes and 46 seconds.
Yeah, this was an absolute five-star classic.
Of course it was, because it had Toriano in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a Toriano match. It really wasn't anything more than that or anything less. It was very, very good for what it was, and I still love the guy.
Yeah, there's not a lot you can say really other than that. It's Toriano, Didiano, and...
There was a bit of a story to it. The story was that Tama Tonga absolutely terrifies Toriano,
right,
and they played that through in the tag matches that followed. this, like where they were wrestling on the undercard in the tag matches, because it was Chaos versus Bullet Club for most of the tour. Yano was just terrified of Tama Tonga and Tangaroa because of the face paint and the thing. I suppose you could argue there's an underlying deceit of a certain jingoistic nature of othering people, but apart from that, you know, it was pretty good.
Other than that, it's totally fine.
But then again, Yano's scared of everything, not just them two, so... And then in block B, Katsuyori Shibata in what arguably was another upset, defeating Minoru Suzuki in 19 minutes and 44 seconds. The story for this had been set up also at the previous tour, when, of course, Zack Sabre Jr. successfully took the Rev Pro title from Shibata and turned on him, well, not on him, just generally turned to join Suzuki-gun. This was, as you'd expect, a cracking match.
Yes, this was one of the great matches of the tour, although it did feel a little bit like maybe they were holding something back as well, because I imagine they're setting up a big feud between the two from, you know, their interactions and stuff. People were quite psyched to see these two match up. But yeah, it was really good, what you would expect from these two. They beat the crap out of each other, basically, and it was a very good piece of work. And yeah, it's a shame that Alex couldn't join us, because I'd be interested. He was obviously talking about who he thought would win the New Japan Cup. I don't think Shibata really came up talking about it. It was a surprise that, so like you say, this was an upset, this match, to an extent where maybe people thought Suzuki would go quite far. So it's interesting as well. We'll talk probably a bit more about Shibata in a bit when we talk about the finals and stuff. But yeah, it was a interesting story they were telling throughout. But this, yeah, the match was really good.
Okay, moving on then. Juice Robinson defeated Yujiro Takahashi in 10 minutes and 21 seconds. Juice Robinson was really cooking on this tour, and this was a good example of how far he has come and the cool things he's doing now with some guys that can work with him. Yujiro was Yujiro. Nothing particularly to write home about, but, you know, well put together. Really enjoyed this match.
Yeah, decent match. I think, yeah, Juice Robinson's another guy who I mentioned earlier, but also is a guy they used, you know, well in the tournament to raise his stock to an extent, and his stock's been on the rise anyway throughout the year. Like, he's been putting in some great performances, obviously the challenge of Goto being the main one. So yeah, I think this is another example of New Japan booking it smartly with some, you know, using it to build up some of these guys and not just having the usual suspects win. And yeah, this match was not amazing, but it was solid, basically.
And then on to what I think was the match of the first round. Tomohiro Ishii defeated Kenny Omega in 29 minutes and 45 seconds in a barnstormer. I loved this match. Ishii, as most people know, I've been a big fan of Ishii for a long, long time, and he just pulls out the goods again.
Yeah, good God, this was a good match. Like, this probably, for me, just edges it as match of the tournament, I think, for me.
Yeah.
There's another one we'll talk about in a bit that pushed it very close indeed. But yeah, this was just amazing. I mean, Ishii was MVP of the tournament, easily. Like, he had basically a match of the year contender in every round. And the styles mesh so well. Obviously, the thing doing the rounds was the counter to the one-winged angel, where Ishii countered it into a stunner, which was an incredible spot. But there was so much going on. It was, you know, kind of what you expect from both guys when it comes to, like, the closing stretch. They're both so good at building drama down in the last 10 minutes. It was just great. It's just so great. Also, Omega apparently was working it hurt, I believe. He's been carrying a bit of an injury, so which could be maybe why he got eliminated in the first round. I don't know. But I think they were probably using it to build up Ishii again a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting with Ishii that he's kind of, again, he's another guy who's maybe been moved a little bit to the back, or, you know,
out of the
picture. Because he challenged for the IWGP title last year when Naito had it. It's like sort of the stopgap feud between when Okada won it back. And they defeated Okada in the G1, but then nothing really came of that, probably because, you know, they're both chaos. So
yeah, the forbidden matchup. Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't get a chance to challenge for the belt again. So hopefully this is kind of the start of moving him up into that title picture again, because, yeah, I mean, for the last few years, he's slightly overlooked still, even, like, how good he actually is, because he seems to often be either the MVP of these kind of tournaments, like the G1 as well. He was one of the best guys in that. Consistently every year, he's always turning out these amazing matches. So, but it's interesting, obviously, from the angle that, again, what would have been good to chat to Alex about it. Maybe we can ask him on another podcast, because his thinking was that Omega will probably win this. I think a lot of other people maybe had that thinking as well. So it was interesting that he goes in as one of the favourites and loses in the first round, which in a way is classic Gedo booking.
Yeah, yeah. I see. That's the thing for me. I didn't agree with that because it's too soon. Mm. You know, and, you know, you look back and even like last year, Okada lost the championship, then lost in the first round of the New Japan Cup. Things have to be a bit more barren for the loser of the Wrestle Kingdom main event for a while. He has to have a true redemption story. He can't just, you know, bounce straight back again. It's got to be a long, drawn-out process of hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and, you know, Tanahashi's had that in the past, losing in the first round and stuff like that. So, and
same again here this year. So
yeah, so there's... Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. There's definitely a theme, I think.
Yep. And then the final match of the first round was Yoshihashi versus Sanada. I love Yoshihashi at the minute. He's doing some fantastic things. Even though he lost in 13 minutes and 57 seconds, Sanada's just brilliant too. This was just cool. Just all around a great match. I really love this.
Yeah, really frantic pace as well. Like proper G1 style, you know.
Yeah,
one of those 12, 13 minute matches where they just go all out. And yeah, Sanada, like you say, Yoshihashi's have, you know, on fire at the moment. Hopefully again, this is a year when he kicks on. But Sanada, I think, we'll see, but it's looking like his push is just going to get more and more this year.
Yeah.
And then hopefully by 2018, because this is how far in advance New Japan think, which is, you know, for fans of American wrestling, shall we say, might be quite shocking when they don't seem to know what they're doing from week to week. But I imagine Sanada, they're going to try and get him to a main event level by 2018. That would be my thinking of where they want to go, because he's so good. Because he's got everything, basically, that they would want.
You
know, the style and the look and everything. So, and yeah, this was just a really good match. Of their styles just match really well. I imagine people would be quite happy if these two had a bit of a feud later in the year.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what comes up with that. Moving into the second round, Evil defeated Yuji Nagata in 13 minutes and 33 seconds in a very good match.
Yes, this was very good indeed.
Not really can say more than about that.
What was that? Sorry.
Not what else you can say about that, really, is there?
Yeah, again, like, Nagata, obviously, is the veteran, played his part really well, and he can still... The thing with Nagata is he can still go when he needs to. You know, he's kind of like Kojima can as well. And yeah, this was just... Like we say, they did really well with Evil in this tournament. Evil, still my favourite name in wrestling. are you a good guy? yeah, it was just a really, really good piece of work that, again, you know, really raised Evil's stock in New Japan. I would, I, thinking about it, it's probably one of the best matches of the tournament, this, to be honest.
Yeah, I would think so. You know, Nagata is still, like, the guy, isn't he? He's still a guy who can put in the goods when he needs to. And I've had some thoroughly enjoyable matches with Yuji Nagata in the last 12 months.
Yeah, and it means something when you beat that guy as well. Yeah. So it's the fact that Evil got that win over him is huge.
Never lost his mojo, Yuji Nagata.
No, never lost his armbar skills.
All right, in the second round, well, how about this? Bad Luck Fale and Toru Yano had an 8-minute and 33-second match.
Why did they have an 8-minute match?
Arguably, you know, the two guys who benefit most from short matches in the company went for a reasonably lengthed one, and I thought it was quite entertaining.
It's a very strange booking decision, that. it wasn't good. It happened. Fale won. Let's move on.
Okay, then. Also in the second round, Katsuyori Shibata defeated Juice Robinson in 11 minutes and 23 seconds. Shibata started showing signs of being a bit invincible at this point, but it was still a cracking match and Juice Robinson's best outing this year so far.
Yes, yeah, it was very good. Also, just on a side note, why did the quarterfinals and semifinals not have any commentary on them?
They were all done on house shows on the tour, weren't they? They were main events of each house show.
Quarterfinals were definitely. Yeah. Which is an interesting way of doing it.
Yeah, I should have talked about this, really. Yeah, the layout was the first two nights were big proper tour shows, with four matches on each for the first round. Then the second round was done on house shows around the loop, each with different main events, and they were for the tournament. And then the semis and quarters got, the semi and the final got a pay-per-view of their own each. Okay, so they were proper shows, as in full shows. But that did mean that they essentially, when they went to the quarterfinals, they just put hard cams on these tiny rooms that they were working that normally they only need 500 or 600 people to fill. So it wasn't as all-encompassing production as you normally expect from New Japan Pro Wrestling. To be honest, I didn't miss it. I thought it was all right. I liked it because it was like, this is wrestling in its purest form. If I went to see the show, this is where it looked like.
Very true. Yeah. It was just interesting, you know, for the tournament to work that way. The match itself was a very nice piece of work. Like you say, Shibata, he looked dominant here, but not too dominant, if that makes sense. Like, Juice put in a really good, what do they call it, like baby face fire.
Yeah, he has got bags of that, yeah.
But I think as well, Shibata needed to look strong going into the semis and the final and the kind of story that they were going to tell in those two matches.
Yeah, but it was a good piece of work, very, very solid. And it gets Shibata over again, doesn't it, really?
It does. And like we say, Juice Robinson's having a very nice 2017, cooking along nicely. So I think they used, again, another guy who did well out of the tournament. They got him, raised him to another level.
Speaking of another level, Tomohiro Ishii was defeated Sonata in 14 minutes and 2 seconds in an absolutely astounding match. Possibly the two best natural athletes in the tournament wrestling each other.
Yeah, you don't think of Ishii as a natural athlete a lot of the times because of like how he looks. But he is. Like, the stuff he does is pretty crazy. This was great. This is two guys who are really on top of their game. The closing stretch again was just tremendous. It wasn't. The thing is, it was probably Ishii's weakest match in the tournament. Like, how crazy is that?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Anyone else would be like delighted with this, but yeah, it's like his third best match. That's how good a tournament.
That laid up our semi-finals of Evil versus Bad Luck Fale and Shibata versus Ishii. So we look at Fale versus Evil first. This was pretty good for what it was. And again, you know, Fale was in this slow burn towards the final, and he wins in 12 minutes and 20 seconds. But again, he shows that little bit more off, that little bit more dominant, that little bit more strength. He's really deploying those tools really well.
Yeah. Yeah, like I say, they really pushed him as like the monster of the tournament. And yeah, it was good for what it was. Again, it's sort of lost under some of the other matches that were really good, but it was still a solid piece of work. And Evil, you know, who had a great tournament, you know, looked good as well. Yeah, there's not a lot more you can say about it really, other than it did the job. It made Farley look strong going into the final, which was important because, like, they'd set him up as being the big monster that someone's going to have to overcome, basically. Can anyone beat this guy? And it continued the story really well and set that up. And yeah, Evil had a great tournament. I'd be interested to see what they do with him going forward into the summer.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. The other semi-final, though, Katsuyori Shibata versus Tomohiro Ishii. Shibata submits Ishii in 22 minutes and 32 seconds. Match of the tournament, I would say. This was exceptionally good. Dream match by anyone's standards. And it's something we haven't seen before. I haven't seen for a very long time. So it was very, very interesting to watch this match up and the way the two heavy hitters dealt with each other.
Yeah, they're quite good, these two, aren't they? like I say, it's either this or Ishii and Omega for match of the tournament, really, depending on your preference. This was incredible. And it was different as well to what they've done in the past because they started off slower. They worked a slower pace to begin with. Obviously, they were still, like, kicking the crap out of one another as they do. But it's not like, obviously, you go back and watch, was it Wrestle Kingdom last year?
Yeah, the Never Open Weight Championship.
There was the famous one from the G1 a couple of years before that. They were very rapid pace. You know, they were going at each other really fast and hitting each other hard from the get-go. This was a bit more measured, and they led up to the crazy finishing sequence. They're just made to wrestle one another, these two, really, aren't they? And, like, the closing stretch was amazing, and the bit where they were just slapping each other, where they sat down opposite one another and just slapped each other continually. It's just, they're clearly both mad. Like, they're clearly both nuts, but it's incredible to watch. And it was, you know, what you would expect from a semi-final bout featuring those two, of the story being they're going to just throw everything at one another to try and make this final. And again, it settled the story nicely for the final as well, with Shibata getting the win, and he had to pull everything out. He had to, you know, choke Ishii unconscious to beat him. He couldn't, like, pin him or submit him. He had to literally make him pass out. It set it up of Farley has easily beaten everyone. And Shibata has had to, you know, go through hell, basically, in his semi-final. And it's all, you know, it's clever tournament storytelling, as we've come to expect from New Japan. It's setting up that this guy's got the odds stacked against him as a babyface because he's gone through so much just to reach the final.
So that brings us to the New Japan Cup final, which was a full-on pay-per-view event with American commentary and the whole nine yards. And in that particular event, now, I've seen all of this show. Alex hasn't seen all of it. So I'm going to give you a rough outline of what happens and get Alex to comment where needs be. The opening match was Hiro Kawato, who defeated Tomoyuki Oka in a brilliant match. For two young lions, this was absolutely boss. It was really, really good. I enjoyed this. It was counter holds and wrestling, and it took 10 minutes, and it was lovely. And I hope to see them two again. And Kawato and Oka seem to be quite the cream of the crop of the young lions that we've had so far in the last few years. They're getting really, really over without really trying that hard. So good for them.
I did hear good things about that one. So yeah, I'll definitely have to go back and check it out.
Yeah. Then we had a six-man tag team match, which was Dave Finley, Jushin Thunder Liger, and Tiger Mask, who defeated El Desperado, Taka Michinoku, and Takashi Ayuzuka. Dave Finley with the finish there, using a stunner as his new finisher.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was very, very good. I love Dave Finley. He's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Same. Yeah. I'd be intrigued to see if Mr. Austin gets wind of that, that the stunner's being used. Like, did you hear, I don't know if you heard Kevin Owens
on
Stone Cold's podcast where they were, he was just basically just taking the mick out of Owens for a good 10-minute segment about using the stunner and why he did it wrong. it's well worth a listen to anyone who hasn't checked it out. And it's just, yeah, they're just fully kayfabing it. And basically Austin's like explaining all the little ins and outs of how to do the stunner correctly and why the kick is so important. Yeah. But yeah, I'd be intrigued to see if anyone tweets him or anything. He talks about Finlay using the stunner.
Kevin Owens and Kevin Owens and Steve Austin go way back, don't they? So
yeah,
it'd be interesting. Interesting to listen to. Actually, you know the first person I saw using a stunner.
Go on.
Norman the Lunatic in WCW in 1989.
Crikey!
Yeah,
that's a name. That's
yeah, Norman the Lunatic. He was tagging with the Steiner Brothers against Doom. That was Ron Simmons and Butch Reed and Dan Spivey. And Dan Spivey threw him into the ropes. And he caught him with a stunner to get the break and hot tagging Scott Steiner. There you go.
Very specific wrestling history.
I know, because it was the first ever. It used to be WCW had a deal with the ITV regions, and they did like 6 episodes on each ITV region. So they did Yorkshire TV, then they did Tyne Tees, and then they did Granada. And it was the only wrestling I had for a very long time. I watched it back and forth. I could tell you every spot in that match pretty much, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was the main event of a TV taping for Power Hour, I think it was. So yeah, but it was a really good match. And that was the first time I ever saw a stunner. We completely lost the plot here, so let's get back on track.
We got off topic slightly, but
yes,
method to that madness.
This is why we have more people. They keep us on track. Right. Next was a tag team match. Tenkoji, Hiroshi Tenzan, Satoshi Kojima in a non-title match defeated Katsuya Kitamura, another young lion, and Yuji Nagata. Kitamura is built like a brick outhouse. He's something else. And had really strong amateur wrestling background. This was pretty, pretty good. You know, as you'd expect for veterans to have a match where they didn't brain themselves and had a bit of fun and still made it entertaining for everybody else. So it's good.
Why was it a non-title match?
I'm guessing because Kitamura isn't Nagata's regular partner, but I'd be hard-pressed to tell you who Nagata's regular partner actually is.
Yeah. it's stuff like that. It's always a bit strange if you can have the champions go over anyway.
Yeah.
Why not just have it as a title match and that's another title defense for them?
But there's no. But having said that, there was no title matches on this card at all. It was all multi-man matches. So
that's true. True.
Yeah, maybe they're just trying to keep the theme. Yeah. Speaking of which, the junior heavyweight champions were in a 6-man tag, which was next. That was 6-man of Gedo, Hiroki Goto, and Jado, the world-class tag team, and Hiroki Goto, never open weight champion. They defeated Suzuki Gun, Minoru Suzuki, Taichi, Yoshinobu Kanemura, the IWGP junior heavyweight tag team champions. Nice piece of work. Jado gets the pin on Kanemura. Yeah, I really enjoyed this match. 10 minutes and 47 seconds. This builds up to the next event, really. And Minoru Suzuki was Minoru Suzuki. He managed to get a cross arm lock on one person and a heel hook on the other person at the same time.
Nice. Yeah.
That was my move of the match. It was move of the match for that one. Yeah. Some interesting comments in this week on the history of UWF and Akira Maeda and those guys as well this week. Chris Charlton was translating that out in his Twitter account. Well worth a read, where he claimed that UWF was really about Sayama and Maeda and not an awful lot else, and didn't really matter who else was in. It wasn't until Pancras that him and his generation, the Shamrocks and those guys, actually had a chance to shine, which I thought was really interesting. Anyway, tag team match, 10-man tag team match. Los Ignorables de Japón, Bushi, Evil, Takahashi, Sanada, and Tetsuya Naito defeated Hiroshi Tanahashi, Juice Robinson, Kushida, Michael Elgin, and Ryusuke Taguchi under the watchful eye of Team Japan Taguchi, Ryusuke Taguchi, in 11 minutes and 37 seconds. Maybe he wants another job, as he should get another job instead of coaching because they lost. but it was fun. It was a good piece of fun, and it is always a thing of beauty to see Los Ignorables working in double teams because they are just so good at it. But yeah, moving on to then to the semi-final of that particular event, which was the eight-man tag match between Chaos, Kazuchika Okada, Tomohiro Ishii, Toru Yano and Yoshihashi against Kenny Omega, Tama Tonga, Tangaloa, and that's the Gorillas of Destiny, as you so quite rightly put them, and Yujihiro Takahashi, 14 minutes and 1 second. A very, very good match again. You know, this is the kind of multi-man matches between Chaos and Bullet Club that have been going on literally for the last 3 years, so they're pretty good at this now. and it was a ton of fun, and you had lots of payoffs from the tournament, like Tama Tonga and Toru Yano, and Yujiro and Ishii. They always kind of have fun together because they hate each other still. So yeah, it was a good piece of work. Brings us to the final, which was Bad Luck Fale versus Katsuyori Shibata. Easily Fale's best match in about, well, 2 years since he wrestled Nakamura for the Intercontinental Championship. This was something really special. Mm. I really enjoyed this.
When did he wrestle Okada last?
It was last year, just after. It was New Japan Cup last year and just afterwards.
Okay. I'd probably say his stuff with Okada was slightly better than this. Yeah. But that's me nitpicking, probably.
I thought this was really good.
This was really good, yeah.
Yeah, I preferred this with Shibata over the Okada stuff, and that's unusual for me to say because I'm a big Okada fan, but this seems to that shoot style against that immovable object seems to work really, really well for me as a fan.
Plus Shibata can literally hit him as hard as he can as well.
Yeah, and Fale's just going to stand there like the Rock of Gibraltar.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, this was really, really good. I just can't get over enough how hard Fale's worked. Totally deserved the final and just had a really good performance. Obviously doesn't win the championship, but you know, it seems like they have big things planned for him. Shibata wins the title, and we'll find out what happens after the tournament in a moment when we've spoken to Alex Watt and what he thinks about this match.
Yeah, agree with what you said. Obviously, like you say, the fact they set up well the story, which I was listening to the English commentary on the final, and they explained all that stuff, the background and things like that, really well, and the crowd were solidly behind Shibata. Like the only bit where the match maybe sagged a little was Fale's heat stuff in the middle, you know, beating down Shibata, maybe was a bit plodding and slowed the match down a bit too much at times, but when Shibata started firing up and doing his comeback, the crowd were so into it. They wanted to see him win, which is what you want when you get to a final like this. The fact that you're setting this guy up as the winner to challenge, you know, we'll say that in a minute, but yeah, it was just a really great piece of work. And the finishing stretch was amazing, with kind of classic Shibata, you know, getting knocked down and firing back up. What was the spot? Fale going for the what's his finisher called?
Fale's finisher, a grenade.
The other one, sorry.
Fale bomb. The Fale bomb.
Yeah, the border toss thing that I'm completely blanking on what he calls it.
They were calling it the Fale bomb on the commentary.
Fale bomb, okay.
Yeah.
So Shibata basically like wriggled out and turned onto his back and got him in the sleeper. I thought that was a really nice spot. And then that obviously led to the finish and choked him out and then PK'd him as hard as humanly possible to put him down.
Oh, here you go. The bad luck fall.
That's the one, the there bad luck fall. Yeah. Yeah. Just completely blanking on the name of that. yeah, the other thing was, the other bugbear I had, and we sort of touched on this last time I was on the podcast, do the refs just not implement the rules anymore? At one point, Shibata just brought a chair into the ring.
Yeah, yeah, that was getting a little silly. Yeah.
Because I got like the idea behind it that, you know, Fale completely cheated on the outside and beaten Shibata with foreign objects to try and keep him down. But yeah, the fact that it was just right in, the referee was just watching it and then did nothing.
Arguably he didn't swing the chair, did he? He just threw the chair in the air and not even at a wrestler, at his opponent. He just threw it in the air, his opponent caught it, and then he drop kicked it. So technically, it was the Rob Van Dam thing of, technically, I didn't hit him with a chair. The chair just happened to be in the way.
It's reaching a bit,
yes. You know, but it would only take it would only take like someone like Red Shoes just one match, and he'd just stop him doing it, and then that would make it a bit more, you know, cachet, wouldn't it? Really.
Yeah, but yeah, that was the only bugbear. It just felt a bit strange in the middle of the match that just happened and nothing was done about it. You know.
Yeah. It's yeah, you're right. I mean, Alex Edwards has talked about this before as well, and Dan Reed did last time he was on the show. You know, it's too many ref bumps, not enough respect of referees at the moment, so maybe they need to fix that and go back a step where they used to tie everything down. They should maybe go back to that again.
Yeah, well, there's a few things they're starting to do again and again that maybe are becoming a little bit stale, like the count-out spots now they're doing all the time. Like, so many of these tournament matches featured them, and it's like they're great, like when they're done well, and it worked here in the final because it makes sense. But if you're doing them in every match, it lessens the impact. Yeah, same with interference and, like we say, ref bumps and weapon shots.
Yeah,
in front of the ref and stuff like that. It's just. They're only minor gripes because it's still, you know, by far and away the best wrestling company in terms of in-ring performances at the moment. It's just like, you know, to keep stuff fresh, they probably shouldn't be doing so much of that stuff in so many matches.
Yeah. So, with Katsuyori Shibata taking that the championship win and the New Japan Cup in 18 minutes and 48 seconds... that meant that he had the pick of all the singles heavyweight championships in New Japan to have a crack at, because the winner of the New Japan Cup has the option of facing any champion. Doesn't have to be the IWGP heavyweight champion. Shinsuke Nakamura in 2014, when he won the championship, went straight back at Hiroshi Tanahashi to get his Intercontinental Championship back. So, you know, you don't have to go for the main title if you don't want to. However, that's where Katsuyori Shibata aimed his crosshairs, and he challenged Kazuchika Okada to the IWGP heavyweight championship, which will happen at Sakura Genesis in Ragoki Kokugan Hall in Tokyo on April the 9th. So that's in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, now, not long.
No. So the main event set for this tournament is Kazuchika Okada versus Katsuyori Shibata, but we'll go through the whole card and have a bit of a preview for you, if that's all right with you, sir.
It is, yeah. I'm surprised they've changed the name. Do we know why that is?
No.
I've been calling the invasion attack for months. When we've been talking about what's going to happen there? Now they've just
they changed it. Like, they changed it for this year, haven't they? They didn't say why.
Yeah,
there's a Wikipedia page there. That's anything at the top. Previously held under the invasion attack name, this marks the first show under the Sakura Genesis name. Nope.
Who knows? Just fancy the change.
Okay, then, fair enough. So the opening match will be Dave Finlay, Jushin Liger, Manabu Nakanishi, old Lumpy himself, Hiroki against Hirai Kawota, Katsuya Kitamaru and Tomoyuki Oka in a six-man tag match, which, you know, given the veterans versus the rookies, I'm pretty sure there's only going to be one winner. I'm saying Nakanishi submits Oka in 5 minutes.
Okay, maybe they'll let it go a little bit longer. I don't know.
We could have a sweepstake on that match, because it's obvious who's winning.
Or Finlay wins it with the stunner again.
Or Finlay wins it with the stunner, maybe.
Maybe.
Okay, the second match is Bullet Club, Hangman Page, Tama Tonga, Tangaroa, and Yujiro Takakashi versus Tiger Mask, Tiger Mask W, Togi Makabe, and Yuji Nagata.
Tiger Mask, Tiger Mask W, Tiger Mask Z, Tiger Mask W.
Satoru Sayama at ringside. Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, I think we probably will do. So that's probably going to be tons of fun, I think. I can't really, not what you can say about it. It's probably going to last around about 8 minutes, and I'm guessing a Bullet Club win. Hangman Page has been due some love, and I think he'll probably take a pinfall win in that one.
Yes, yeah, Hangman Page, I'm surely due a little bit more of a push up the card. It seems like he's treading water a little bit there, when obviously in Ring of Honor he's a much bigger deal.
I think he probably gets outshone by Adam Cole, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And to be fair, we could be looking at Adam Cole going somewhere else in the next couple of months, if the rumours are to be believed, which may open it up for him to go up the card a little bit more.
Yeah. So then, we move on to match four, which is for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Champion, current champions Suzuki Guns, Tai Chi and Yoshinobu Kanemura will defend against the world-class tag team Jado and Gedo. This should be very, very interesting. This is going to be an old-school psychology match with a lot of cheating on both sides.
Yes, yeah, it definitely will be.
Yeah, I also can't think of anyone who's more hated in New Japan than Tai Chi at the moment. But,
yeah, people really dislike that guy.
Yeah. there was an argument this week. I think Chelsea was outlining an argument, the reason why Zack Sabre Jr. joined Chaos was so he didn't have to wrestle Tai Chi. He's just greasy slime ball.
Yeah.
There's
a few of those in Suzuki Gun, though, which I like. Yeah.
So that should be an interesting, fun match to watch with those two taking on the world-class booking team as well. The next match is Bad Luck Fale and Kenny Omega versus Tomohiro Ishii and Toru Yano in a special tag team match. That could be really fun. That could be show-stealing fun.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll steal the show, but it should be a good piece of work, definitely.
It could be really, really funny and really, really athletic at the same time.
Well, the fact you're going to have Ishii and Omega clashing again will be... I imagine they'll carry the bulk of the match after the classic they had in the New Japan Cup.
And more Yano trying to body slam Fale. I'm well up for that.
Yeah. But yeah, do you think Ishii and Omega might be wanting to do like a little bit of a stopgap feud between the two or something like that going forward?
Might be worthwhile, and you could just have Bullet Club and Chaos tag teams wrestling each other in this manner, as long as you get Omega and they rotate around the others till they figure out what they're going to do with Omega.
Yeah, because there was, obviously you talked about the New Japan Finals card and the big tag match. Both him and Okada were in that, but they barely like interacted at all. So they're obviously keen to keep those two apart for as long as they can, which is, you know, smart, because you want to build to the rematch and make it a massive deal. This might be a nice way to keep both of them busy, because, as I say, hopefully Ishii's going to climb up the card a little bit as well, but they've got to get to that point. They've got other stuff they've got to sort out with Shibata in the main event of them, and then, you know, Okada's got about 20 people after him for obvious reasons, so, yeah.
Yeah, bullet on your back when you're the champion, but that's actually true in this particular case. Los Ignorables de Japón, Bushi, Evil Sonata and Tetsuya Naito will wrestle Taguchi Japan, Hiroshi Tanahashi, Juice Robinson, Ricochet, who's back off of a long sabbatical, and Ryosuke Taguchi. 8-man tag match should be just ridiculous double team spots for about 15 minutes.
Yeah, that should be a bloody lovely piece of work. I assume they're setting up the 6-man belts maybe again, and then possibly Naito and Juice. Is that from what I'm hearing?
Yeah.
I haven't watched the New Japan Cup final much of it, but the multi-man match both of those were in, they seem to be, you know, playing up
it
to
would
the
make
fact
sense,
that,
yeah.
Yeah, that those two maybe will. They What's the next show after this?
They can't run Juice at the Heavyweight Championship yet. It's nowhere near over enough.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is to be announced. So the event chronology, the next one's Lionsgate 4, which is for the young Lions, isn't it? So
right, and then are we into junior heavyweight stuff?
Yeah, we should be Best of Super Juniors in April, isn't it? So.
So, yeah, could be built into the summer then for those two, I guess.
So, yes.
But and then obviously the 6-man with the rest of the people in that match.
Yeah, so we'll have a think about that. That could be interesting stuff. And then we have an IWGP Tag Team Championship match, which is Tenkozy, current reigning champions, arguably the greatest tag team in Japanese wrestling history, against War Machine, Hanson and Raymond Rowe. I've got a lot of time for War Machine. I think they're really, really cool. But I do think Tenkozy will probably retain, because we're not sure about the status of Raymond Rowe. And also because I think it would probably be detrimental to have the tag team titles over in America again for a while. I'm not saying it isn't going to be fantastic, though.
Yeah, I'm glad to see War Machine back in there. When they came over for the G1 Tag League, didn't they, last year?
Yeah.
It's good to see them back in the fold properly. I actually was leaning more towards them maybe getting the belts in that one, but I'm not sure What's going on with Raymond Rowe?
I was pretty sure he had a WWE tryout and was more or less signed, sealed, and delivered, but that was the rumor I heard, anyway. So I'm not really sure because he was. I heard it during the Honor Rising tour, and then so.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I think that's just passed me by for some reason. But if it's the case that he has signed the contract, then yeah, you would expect Tenzan Kojima to retain. Because I think without that knowledge, I would have maybe come down on War Machine getting a run with the belts, which they still could. It depends when, you know, if that rumor is true, when Rowe is going to report to NXT. Maybe they'll put the belts on them for a month or two until that happens. I don't know.
Possibly. But I'm also thinking about wider Ring of Honor politics. You've got the Hardy brothers in Ring of Honor for, what, one more month at least? And you've got Tenkozy as IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, and the Hardys are trying to prove they're the greatest tag team in the world.
In the world ever.
In the world ever. But you've got to get Tenkozy to the States because you can't take Hardys to Japan. So, anyway, it's a thought.
This is what Jado and Gedo have to juggle on a daily basis, all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. We'd like to have them for a while, but they might lose the championship. Oh, I don't know. Yeah. maybe not. No. Yes. Anyway, moving on. The next match is the singles match for the NEVER Openweight Championship, which will feature Hirooki Goto defending against Zack Sabre Jr. of Suzuki Gun. This should be a corker.
Yeah, now we're talking. This should be quite the match, I think. Yeah, very much looking forward to this one. It'll be very stiff, I imagine, and very good fun.
It'll be interesting
to see what the result is as well, because they're obviously, understandably so, very hot on Zack Sabre Jr. He's the hot new property for New Japan as well, so
yeah,
wouldn't shock me if we saw a title change here.
And noticeably aren't pushing in as a junior heavyweight, which is the obvious thing to do.
Yes, which is good though as well, because he doesn't wrestle like a junior heavyweight. He wrestles, you know, a very hard-hitting style.
Yeah, and then we have the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship rematch from Wrestle Kingdom. Kushida versus Hiromi Takahashi is defending that title. This should be just as good as Wrestle Kingdom, I hope.
Yes, the match itself, really looking forward to. I'm a little bit worried that they're going to put the belt back on Kushida. That's the only thing, which is not a knock on him by any means. We love that guy, but it's Takahashi's been so good as champion. Like, he's really, like, breathed new life into that division, and it's exciting, and it's a new direction, and yeah, I'm just hoping they don't just fall back on Kushida again. I think there's worth in him chasing the belt as well. And you've got potential infighting in the ranks in LIJ as well between Takahashi and Bushi down the line, which could be very nice. So
yeah,
we'll see what they decide to do there. Personally, I would want them to keep it on Takahashi, but I feel like they're going to switch it back to Kushida, which I think is probably the wrong move.
It depends on I'd be interested to see what the block draws are for Best of Super Juniors, and if you get Bushi and Takahashi in the same block, that would be very interesting. And you'd wouldn't need the title for them too then, because you've got a personal issue. Which is what Takahashi is actually excelling at, you know. So, yeah, I can see what you mean. You're concerned about Kushida needs to be away from the title for a little bit longer, at least.
Yeah, I would think so.
But equally, I can see possibilities with Takahashi without the championship. So it's interesting to see where it would go.
Yeah, but I mean, like you say, the match itself will be bloody wonderful, I imagine.
And then the main event, which is Kazuchika Okada defending the IWGP Heavyweight Championship against Katsuyori Shibata, the New Japan Cup winner, which is what today's show has all been about. This should be really, 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 really good. This should be up there with the Omega match, and it tells a trilogy of stories, really, for Okada in the championship race. He has the feud with Omega, which is one type of wrestler. He has a feud with Minoru Suzuki, who is completely a different type of wrestler. And then he's got a feud with Shibata, who's a different type of wrestler again. So this gives some depth to Okada. I'm not sure if Shibata is going to win it in the long term, because I'm guessing the Okada keeps the belt for that little bit longer. I think this is the one where they're trying to really define him as the ace, this particular title reign. So if that's the case, then I can't see Okada losing this just yet.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that. I mean, RIP Okada's beautiful face. something we didn't talk about in terms of Shibata, which made the win all the more surprising in the New Japan Cup, is we thought possibly his push was going to stall because of all the rumours of what was going on in his personal life and stuff like that. So it's interesting and nice that they've stuck with him, because it felt like he was, you know, he paid his dues. We've spoken about the stuff about him leaving and how angry people were backstage about him. You know, particularly Tanahashi, I believe, was not happy about the way he left and how he basically left New Japan in the lurch and then was seen as he came back when New Japan got hot and all that kind of stuff. But he's paid his dues. He's worked his way back up the card. I think he's one of the most over guys on the roster, and he deserves the shot at the main event. Like you said, I don't see him winning, but the way the match plays out, obviously you're then saying this guy is another main event guy, which he basically is anyway, of course, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, he's at that era, he's at that level where
and you know Okada will make him look like $1,000,000 as well. He does beat him, because he does that with everyone.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this card. This card's loaded, and it's going to be really, really good. So
yeah, particularly those top three matches are all, I mean, like we said in February, how many match of the year candidates have we had already? We've had a few more from the New Japan Cup. All three of those could be as well. Like, yeah, it's pretty crazy. We'll only be there in start of April after that card, and we could be looking at like 15, 20 match of the year candidates from New Japan already.
You've got Best of the Super Juniors, you have Ricochet back, you've got the CMLL roster to you, you've got Marty Scurll open to you from Ring of Honor, you've got Will Ospreay back in the fold, you've got a bunch of Ring of Honor guys you could use if you wanted to, if you wanted them to stay in the junior heavyweight division. You've got a bunch of stuff that could happen.
We're moving to Dominion in the summer as well, which is the second biggest card in many ways, so they'll obviously have a stacked card for that one as well.
Yeah, so this should be really, really interesting in the weeks to come.
Yeah, and then we've got G1 after that as well, which I'm sure we'll only have, 10, 20, 30 match of the year candidates in that one, so...
Yeah, well, maybe we'll be there to watch every match like we did last year. What do you reckon, Alex?
I would like to, yeah. I'll try my best.
Fair enough then. Well, we'll see what we'll let you know a bit closer to the time, because it nearly killed us last year. But
yeah. So there was a lot of wrestling last year. It's a big year for New Japan. Let's put it that way.
Okay then, well, that's pretty much our show for today. Thank you very much for listening. I have been James Troopen. You can follow me at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter. You can follow Alex at AlexWatt187 on Twitter as well. Thank you very much for your time, sir.
That's all right, yeah, hopefully. It's been a few weeks since I've been on, so it was nice to chat about New Japan again.
Yes, yeah, and we'll be back next week with the Beginner's Guide to Japanese Wrestling, where we'll be looking at FMW in 1990 with barbed wire and bombs, oh my. that's next week's show. Thank you very much for listening today. Take care, and we'll see you soon. Bye! ¶¶